Every day, thousands of Comcast engineers and technologists like Kunle put people at the heart of everything they create.
The way that I approach work post-fatherhood has really been trying to understand the generation that we're building devices for. Here at the Comcast family, we're building an integrated in-home Wi-Fi solution for millions of families like my own.
Now millions of families can work, learn, and play together under one roof. Visit ComcastCorporation.com to learn more.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, if I told you that doctors were using a 140-year-old device to diagnose serious disease, you probably wouldn't believe me, but such is the case with the blood pressure monitor, and it is in need of a dire upgrade. So says David Connolly. He's from the Cardiovascular Research Programme. He's the manager there at the College of Medicine, Nursing and Health Science at the University of Galway. He joins me now. David, welcome to the programme. Let's start off with some really basic stuff before we get into the blood pressure monitor. What does the heart do, and what is our pulse exactly?
Sure, Jonathan. Thanks for having me on the show. It's great to be here. Anytime I think about what the heart does, it brings me back to my early days in school, attending one of my first science classes and being told to open the page on the heart and the circulatory system. So the heart itself really isn't kind of standalone. It's part of a bigger system, which is the circulatory system, the arteries and the blood vessels and the veins. So looking at a typical diagram of a heart, you would see the typical shape heart with a tube coming out from the right-hand side, generally represented in red, which represents the oxygenated blood that the heart needs to pump around the body. So the oxygenated blood then is pumped around, and it feeds all the organs and it feeds the muscles. And really what it does is provides the fuel for movement. And if you could really simplify what the heart does, that's it in a sentence. It provides fuel for movement and it removes the waste product from that movement as well.
Right. So the pulse that we're getting is sort of a wave, is it, from the pumping, the double beat of our heart?
Exactly. So you mentioned a double beat. If you look more detail at the heart, you'll see that it's made up of four chambers. And that beat itself, it's not one single thump. It's like a thump thump. And what we're seeing here is the actual sequential heartbeat. The heartbeat actually starts at the top of the heart. And this is controlled by electrical signal. And everyone's used to seeing this electrical signal, be it on the likes of ER. It's called the ECG. So it's this electrical signal that starts the heartbeat and actually controls it very, very finely down to the microsecond level of when valves should open and when the top of the heart should constrict first, and then very soon after, you get the bottom half of the heart constricting. So it's the bottom half of the heart which has the ventricles. And if we think about the left ventricle, this is where the blood pressure comes from. It's the most muscular chamber of the heart, and it's muscular because it's actually pumping this blood all the way around the heart, and it needs a pressure to do that.
So when you put the cuff around the bicep, what is it measuring exactly? Is it just the timing? Is it the strength of it? What does one of these typical monitors do?
So the monitor you mentioned, and I think you introduced it there saying that it was, you know, invented first in 1881. So that's called a sphygmomanometer. It's a long word, but everyone's familiar with it.
Is it a sphygmomanometer?
Sphygmomanometer. So it's an M in there.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So the way it works is that you use this cuff, which is inflated with air generally. And what you're actually doing is you're pushing it up around the, as you said, the bicep part of the arm. And you're using pressure in the cuff to block the brachial artery. It's one of the biggest arteries in the arm. And if you put your hand underneath your bicep there and squeeze it, you can kind of feel a pulse there. And that's the brachial artery. Then the way
I don't feel a pulse, David. I'm doing it now.
I have my doubts, Jonathan.
I must have a pulse. Go on.
But I suppose what it does then is you gradually release the pressure, reduce the pressure in the cuff. And you, at the same time, you listen with a stethoscope to where the brachial artery is. And as soon as you hear that first thump coming back, that thump-thump coming back, that's your systolic pressure. you keep reducing the pressure in the cuff, and eventually that sound disappears again, and that actually represents your diastolic pressure. So it's by using, I suppose, a combination of the pressure in the cuff, but also listening for these two signals.
But what's the difference between these two different pressures?
So the systolic pressure, which is the larger value when you see your blood pressure reading, that's the blood pressure from the point at which the heart is in its fully constricted position, when it's compressing mostly. And then the diastolic is the pressure when the heart is not constricted.
Right. Okay. So you're measuring it almost like you can tell the distance between those two values will tell you something about the strength of the heart, presumably.
Yeah, it tells us quite a lot, actually, Jonathan. So it's one of the first things that a clinician or your doctor will do for you when you have a general checkup is to check your heart, your blood pressure. So even a quick blood pressure reading in itself, you know, it's a single reading. So that in itself is flawed. That's what we believe, that it's flawed. But also the act of taking the blood pressure is quite subjective. So when exactly did you hear that? You could be out 5 millimeters plus or minus on both readings. So yes, sphygmomanometers have gotten better and automated, but there is still other factors that affect the blood pressure reading.
Right, but it tells us what exactly, because I'm not clear about that. What does it actually tell us about about someone's health or about the heart of somebody?
Yeah.
Or about blood flow? Like I actually don't know anything about this thing, and I've seen it and it's been done to me so many times. I don't know anything about what it actually does.
I think the easiest way to maybe visualize it, and maybe hopefully this will explain it. I kind of see the heart and the circulatory system as a closed loop system. So there's a fixed volume of liquid in all your blood vessels, and there's a pump in there that is, with every beat, is increasing the pressure. So what gives you your pressure values is the stiffness of the tubes that the liquid is in, and I suppose the elasticity of that of these tubes, your arteries, for example. So a very high systolic blood pressure will indicate that when the heart is pumping, it's pumping at a really high pressure, and this can represent significant problems. It can represent a stiff arteries or restriction in the artery system, which is then, pointing in the direction of a potential adverse cardiovascular events coming your way in the future.
Right.
So blood pressure is kind of a general reading you would take that is very kind of informative, but not fully diagnostic as to whether or not you definitely have a heart attack, for example.
Right. So there are a number of issues with this cuff. What are they? Why is it problematic in terms of getting a really clear idea of what's going on with the heart? Yeah.
So I suppose one of the first things I always think about is when you're going into your doctor for a checkup, some people encounter what's called the white coat syndrome. So if you get a little bit excited, people can get nervous. And so this initial blood pressure reading that they take, you'll find that sometimes they might take one and decide, well, oh, look, your blood pressure is really up here. We'll give it a few minutes, sit down there, relax, try and relax. And we take another reading.
Mm.
And invariably between the first and the second reading, your pressure will have dropped purely, I suppose, based on the skills of the healthcare provider to make you feel relaxed.
Right.
But you can see that there's an actual psychological impact as well of having your blood pressure reading taken.
Okay. What else?
If your doctor then says, well, it looks like you're borderline high blood pressure here, we're going to give you what's called an ambulatory blood pressure monitor to take home and wear for 24 hours. And this is where I actually believe there is significant problems, because this is the gold standard now for diagnosing hypertension.
Yeah.
And this hasn't really changed, as I said, back to we're using a sphygmomanometer, but we're actually just capturing a very short snapshot of time, using 24 hours to base a clinical diagnosis, in which
and we're talking about like serious implications based on the accuracy and the depth of that measurement.
Absolutely, yeah. So people are diagnosed hypertensive on the basis of a 24-hour snapshot, in which 96 data points are taken. So I have worn these ambulatory blood pressure monitors myself, and I know for a fact that you can discount the first four or five readings. You're driving home, you're trying to get home, you're in traffic, your arm's not in the right position. So then you get home, you might eat your dinner, and that's having an impact. You go to bed and you try to fall asleep. That's definitely having an impact. So if you look at those 96 values or the 96 data points within that 24 hours, how many of those can you actually trust? And it's these values that are being brought forward then to diagnose you as hypertensive or not, but also being used to, I suppose, titrate drug treatments to try and get in control of your blood pressure.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, incorrect diagnosis leads to more time, more patients, but also extra stress on the part of the patient. So what is the solution to that? Presumably it's some sort of constant monitoring over time. What about our Apple Watch? Will our Apple Watch be able to replace the sphygmomanometer?
Well, possibly, but really, I think you hit the nail on the head there when you said continuous. We need to come up with a solution that is non-occlusive. So when I say non-occlusive, this means it does not restrict your arm. So there's no feeling of having your blood pressure taken.
Yeah.
It needs to be continuous. So it's taking beat-to-beat measurements. And it needs to be clinically accurate. So we believe that we have a solution here in Galway, from the University of Galway. We've developed technology that we know can carry out continuous blood pressure monitoring on a beat-by-beat basis. We've proven that it's accurate across the relevant pressure range. And one of our next steps is actually to prove that it'll be clinically validate this. So
right. And so what stage is it at now? It's in preclinical trials, is it? So animal models. And you're presumably looking at some sort of wearable or implantable. What is the technology being used at the moment?
So our technology is, I suppose, a combination of both an implantable sensor.
Right.
The way this will work is that it's a very small sensor, currently at 4 millimeters wide and 6 millimeters long and about less than a millimeter thick. So this will then be implanted with minimal invasive applicator under the skin adjacent to the radial artery.
At that size, it's probably not just injectable yet, is it? But that's the goal, presumably.
It is the goal. We are constantly iterating our design and trying to get it to become much more miniature so that we can, I suppose, make this invasiveness as minimal as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then this implantable blood pressure monitor would then presumably wirelessly communicate to something the patient was wearing.
Yeah, exactly. So I mentioned that it's a powerless sensor, but it does need to receive a signal and then it transmits the signal back. It has to be adjacent to the reader, quite close.
Mm.
So we feel that the perfect site, and I've already mentioned the radial artery, that's in the wrist. So we plan to implant it in the wrist, close to the radial artery, using ultrasound to guide its location. And then we will couple it to its bracelet reader system. And this will then wirelessly transmit to maybe a phone-based app.
Or a watch, yeah.
Yeah.
So what is the limitations of the iPhone watch in measuring this? Because they do measurements, because it does sound a little invasive having something injected into your wrist. Yeah. Can you compare those two approaches for me?
Sure. I suppose maybe just to talk about wearables on the market at the moment. This is a very, very crowded space. And if we look today, we'll find new wearables available that may not have been there yesterday. One of the things that is crucial for us is that any technology being used to diagnose hypertension should be clinically validated.
Yeah.
And as of yet, we see nothing on the market that does this.
Right. Okay.
So clinical validation is key. So
because what you get from your iPhone might be helpful, but it's not sort of used by doctors as an approved way of measuring blood pressure. So, okay. So that's sort of out in its current form anyway.
Exactly. If you bring a data set from your Apple Watch into the doctor, they can look at it and say, well, this is interesting. However, they can't trust it. You know, it hasn't been clinically validated.
Mm.
And also, currently, we're at this point where large data sets are beginning to present at the clinic. And I think, as of yet, healthcare providers, medical centers are not fully equipped yet to deal with data in this capacity.
But presumably your device is going to create a huge amount of data, because if it's wearable and you want to get a much better view of what's going on over a long period of time with someone's blood pressure, you're talking about a lot of data points compared to the cuff that takes 95 over the course of 24 hours. How many would yours take, and what will that tell us? How will that give us a better idea of what's going on in the heart?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And we really feel that's where the strength of our device will shine through in time. So if we look at a 24-hour comparison to the ambulatory blood pressure monitor, our device would actually produce over 100,000 data points. So if you expand that to a month, we're talking about 3 million data points of blood pressure, which we would also have the heart rate. So combining or using this data, it's much easier to see true trends. We can maybe say, well, this is definitely an outlier. This is due to the meal I had. This is due to the exercise I took. Mm. But we anticipate that we'll be able to, I suppose, better diagnose firstly, because I mentioned all the concerns about the current blood pressure monitoring systems. But if we can provide data sets of this size, we'll really be able to use that data to, better titrate treatments, but also more accurately diagnose. I would say that maybe there's a percentage of hypertensive patients that could be misdiagnosed.
Yeah.
So we feel by providing data, it really will add a lot of strength to diagnosis.
At the end of the day, if you're diagnosed with something like hypertension, you're often presumably given a course of medicine. You're now involved in some monitoring program with the doctor checking in on you and so on. But if we had a much better view of what's going on with our blood pressure, would we be able to better predict things like oncoming heart disease, heart attacks and so on, do you think? Because that could be worth its weight in gold.
Absolutely, yeah. I personally think that standalone blood pressure data may not be able to give us this just yet.
Right.
But I do believe that we are getting there with complementary diagnostic tests. And the diagnostic tests I think about now are the advances that are being made in the likes of cardiovascular CT, being used to generate CT angiography, and also being used to generate CT physiology values. So these physiological values derived from CT would normally be generated in the cath lab. So you'd have a pressure wire inserted into your cardiovascular or your coronary arteries, and they would take the pressure differential across a stretch of that artery.
Right.
We can now do this with these cardiovascular CT scanners. They're very rapid. They will scan the whole heart in less than a second. And the data from those can be used, I believe, in conjunction then with the likes of our SmartShape data to maybe say, well, look, we can identify a plaque here that is maybe somewhat vulnerable, and there's somewhat potential that that could rupture. But if we see that then with our SmartShape data, that there's a sustained or acute high blood pressure values, that combined with a vulnerable plaque will lead to an adverse cardiovascular event.
And being able to predict that is absolutely amazing. If we get to that stage, then we're on our way to eliminating heart attacks. Really, really interesting speaking with you. David Connolly is the Cardiovascular Research Program Manager at the College of Medicine, Nursing and Health Science at University of Galway. David, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.